friends, and welcome back to Technology Now, a weekly show from Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, where we take what's happening in the world and explore how it's changing the way organizations are using technology. We're your hosts, Aubrey Lovell.
And Michael Bird. And Aubrey, welcome back. It's been three very long episodes without you, so really, really glad to have you back.
Well, thank you. It's definitely great to be back. So, Michael, what are we doing this week?
Well, in this episode, we are looking at whether AI in healthcare is all it's hyped up to be, at least for now. So the role artificial intelligence has played in the wider healthcare space in recent years is undeniable and has been very well documented, from its use in drug discovery to assisting with the organization and storage of patient medical records. It does continue to play a vital role. But is AI ready to start diagnosing and treating patients? Outside of a few tech hub nations, is the rest of the world being left behind when it comes to AI in healthcare? And aside from the financial aspect, how is AI regulation being monitored when it comes to looking after people's health?
So if you're the kind of person who needs to know why what's going on in the world matters to your organization, this podcast is for you. And if you haven't yet, subscribe to your podcast app of choice so you don't miss out. All right, let's do this. Now, among the endless list of areas in which AI is having or could have an effect, healthcare is a top priority. The World Health Organization has predicted there will be a shortfall of about 10 million health workers by 2030, mostly in lower-income countries. And in those countries, access to healthcare can be limited, especially in more rural areas. The London Chamber of Commerce reports that AI is helping ease this problem by, quote, enabling remote patient monitoring, predictive analytics for disease outbreaks, and diagnostic assistance through AI-powered imaging technologies. And there's more on that in the show notes. In fact, rather than simply relying on AI to help, some of the most revolutionary processes in healthcare are being developed in these countries.
But even with the incredible work being done around the globe, artificial intelligence is still in its infancy in terms of how it can be relied on in healthcare. It is also still very much open to hallucinations, which is where AI makes stuff up, and data breaches. On top of that, the regulations around data storage might need looking at if effective AI training models can be built. Oh, and then there's the reality that real-world patient care very much needs real-world medical professionals. So is AI ready to help them? Well, to give us the bigger picture, I recently interviewed Rich Bird, no relation, worldwide healthcare and life sciences lead at Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. And I started by asking Rich whether AI has actually generated any proven benefits to us when it comes to healthcare.
So I think the potential for AI in healthcare is huge. And I also think, perhaps not the most popular point of view, but some of the dangers are there as well. So what we really need to do is get AI right in healthcare. So when we look at healthcare around the world, we can see quite easily that the demand for healthcare is on the increase, and it's really dynamic. It's really complicated. So whether that's people living longer with complex long-term conditions or a shortage of clinicians, nurses, and staff to meet that demand is somewhat constrained. And for me, this is really where AI can step in. And I think within healthcare, it's fair to say that they're quite conservative in terms of deploying new technologies. Clinical technologies, of course. So when we look at medical imaging, diagnostic imaging, they're on the forefront of the technology there. But when we're considering the regulations around healthcare and healthcare data, it really needs to be done correctly. You know, over the last few years, I'm sure the audience will see that healthcare is creeping into their consumer devices as well, right? So we've got prosumer, consumer level devices that is collecting data on the patient's wrists, in the patient's phones. Then we've got medical IoT devices that are at the bedside that are also digitizing human analog body signals. I know we talk about digital transformation a lot. And for me, that's what it means in healthcare. It's taking footsteps, heart rates, blood pressures, O2, and turning that into information that we can make better decision in. And then when we think about the potential of telehealthcare helping with some of these demands, that can really bring that data at the edge into a clinical environment. I think that's really exciting and a huge potential for AI in healthcare. But we need to make sure that the data is collected and protected properly. So when it shows up in the clinical systems, it can be trusted and it can be accepted. And the next thing is around generative AI. So how can we use chatbots in patient interactions to help with a little bit more of a informal approach to the patients, and to a certain extent do some translation, right? Because sometimes we could be guilty of taking it for granted that everybody speaks the same language, but they don't. How can we use Gen AI and AI with those kind of patient interactions? But I'll give you one caveat, right? We need to be careful with generative AI and healthcare data, because generative AI is literally making things up. And that's the power of it, right? And we're all thoroughly entertained with the images that we see, but we need to be careful with it having the ability to change healthcare data. We need data to be in a, you know, protected securely from a regulation perspective, but we also need to know if changes have been made, what changes have been made, and where possible, avoid that altogether. So again, Gen AI has got huge potential, but we need to be careful with it to make sure we're using it in the right situations.
So has AI reached the stage where the medical profession can trust it to diagnose issues in patients yet? Or are we a long way off?
I think we're getting there. If there is some way we can use this technology to triage individuals, then I think that's super important, especially in like really high population countries where they're really looking to make sure that the right pathway through a healthcare system for the right patient for their condition is something that's super important that will avoid the negative impacts of a doctor seeing everybody for everything. And healthcare is one of those industries where if you throw more resources at it, so if you put like 50, 100 more nurses in a healthcare system, it doesn't necessarily mean that the healthcare system is going to be able to see more patients if we're not also working on the efficiency. And that's where AI can show up in terms of making the healthcare systems more efficient and making this money, our money, whether we're paying it in taxes or health insurance, go further and have a more meaningful impact on the population. And let me be clear, right? It is about population and it is about the individual. We always need to be focused on the individual. So for me, when I look at AI in healthcare, it really fits into three buckets, right? And you call out the one that's most interesting to most people, which is using AI to improve clinical outcomes and inform better clinical decision-making. So they're the use cases that we see around medical imaging. Is there a way that AI computer vision can help radiologists see more things that they couldn't before, be able to compare medical imaging over time to see the changes in the patient's physiology over a specific time compared to the condition that they've got? The second bucket of AI in healthcare is really around operational efficiency. And I don't mean surgical operations, even though that some of those use cases come into it as well. But I mean, like, are we making sure that we're using the emergency room properly? Are we able to increase the efficiency of those environments so we can see more patients in a safe way? Hospitals, if we go all the way down to hospitals, we could see that they're some of the most complex and most expensive real estate buildings in the world. How can we use AI to make sure that people are coming in, having a positive experience and leaving in the most efficient way possible? And something a little less sexy, right? But it always needs to be addressed. How is healthcare providers getting paid? Whether it's a, you know, an insurance environment or a single payer environment, AI can really have an impact there as well. Even right down to coding the treatments that are delivered correctly so the providers can get paid for what they're actually doing. And then the third example of AI in healthcare is really around AI and security. So video camera surveillance, touchless entry, or ensuring that doctors are washing their hands correctly. There's a lot around safety and security that can be enabled by AI as well.
I mean, it sounds like AI is quite useful from like a logistics perspective, trying to manage resource, trying to manage people, trying to manage processes. Is that like the quick and easy win for AI from a healthcare perspective?
That is going to be the proof of concept that is first, right? So a perfect example of that is some of the natural language recognition software that we have that can help doctors dictate notes that the AI can then take down with accuracy, high accuracy, but then also help to summarize those notes in a shorter amount of time. Because what we really want to do, right, the ultimate aim is to have doctors in front of people and people to spend less time in front of doctors. And AI has a real part to play in that.
So I guess it's leaving clinicians to do the things that they're good at and maybe trying to figure out a way of AI picking up the stuff that they're not so good at.
Yes, exactly. And what we want our clinicians to be good at is that bedside manner. Like, nobody wants to hear the robot or the AI will see you now. We all still crave that personal contact and the care that is what is the most important about healthcare.
So what are the big challenges that you see with regards to AI becoming a really valuable technology in healthcare? Are we talking like economics? Are we talking legislation? Are we talking something in between?
I'd say all of that, as well as regulation. If we're going to provide better healthcare for the individual, but then of course, better healthcare for the whole population, we need AI to be able to, I'm going to say, and this is a dangerous subject, right? See all of the patient's data. When I go into the future and AI is looking at me, I want it to know my background, maybe the environment that I was brought up in, conditions that I've had in the past, conditions that I've had recently, even my DNA. In the ideal world, an AI would have access to all of that information in the same way in the past a family doctor would have access to all that history. I think we're a long way away from that kind of holistic AI care, but improving those operational efficiencies. I think that's what we should be exploring first. But then thinking even further down the line is where I really get excited about that, right? So I just talked, you know, clearly about the full picture of me being in the AI's mind. In the future, there could be a concept around leaving our digital selves to science. Once I've gone, what happens to my data is less important than when I'm alive. And to me, that's really exciting. I could talk about this for hours, right? Because then I start to think about de-anonymizing patient data. And somewhere down the line, we find that an individual's got a condition that we can go back and treat. How do we get back to the person that donated that data so we can get them the treatment that they need? It's such an exciting field. I think we're at the start of the journey, but the potential is huge.
Absolutely fascinating. And we'll be back with Rich in a moment, so don't go anywhere.
All right, then. It is time for Today I Learned, the part of the show where we take a look at something happening in the world that we think you should know about. Aubrey.
Okay, so this one is pretty cool. So researchers at a university in the US, in collaboration with DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, have discovered that it is possible for a single human to control 100 autonomous vehicles without suffering any undue stress.
Whoa.
Now, the research was led by Julie A. Adams, a professor of engineering, and published in the journal Field Robotics. She deployed 250 autonomous aerial drones and ground rovers in various urban settings where visual and satellite communication was impaired by buildings. The test took existing off-the-shelf vehicles and engineered them to be autonomous, adding a virtual reality interface called I3 that lets a single human controller lead them with high-level directions. And here's the best bit. That controller's official title is the Swarm Commander.
Yes, love it.
I love it. The Swarm Commander trialed exercises with a number of vehicles being added. And every 10 minutes, the commander would give an update along with sensors constantly reading their stress levels. And it turns out managing up to 100 autonomous vehicles was literally no sweat. This potentially means a huge change in the efficiency and economics of controlling swarms of vehicles for everything from wildfire firefighting or disaster response in urban areas to delivery drones. The future is now.
Absolutely incredible. And what an awesome job title Swarm Commander is, I have to say. Well, speaking of AI, now it's time to return to our guest, Rich Bird, to talk about how AI-led healthcare is developing and the challenges and opportunities it presents. And a big question to get us back into it, whether Rich thinks globally AI will even the healthcare playing field or create a larger divide when it comes to healthcare delivery across the world.
Having access to every individual on the planet to a modern, to a certain extent, digitized healthcare system so they can get the treatment that they need for the conditions that they have is the utopian view of healthcare. Hopefully, the more developed economies can develop to a stage where we can reduce the impact and, you know, the draw on the local grid to such an extent that then it's easier to deploy in remote communities. And we see some of these trends showing up in the financial services industry, right? Right. Traditionally, you needed to go to the high street bank to do your banking. You'd go see the bank manager. Whereas now in developing economies, they do all that on their mobile devices. And that's something that we've kind of figured out and then spread, you know, democratizing that access to financial services. I think that's a model for healthcare to go into some of those more rural communities and to get into places where the people are, but perhaps the healthcare isn't.
Yeah. So what should we be doing now in terms of AI and healthcare?
Interoperability is a big subject in healthcare, right? Can you take your healthcare with you? We get into some difficulties now because to a certain extent, that was an afterthought. You know, it's the difference between open source and open systems. We need to make sure that everything talks to everything else. And again, it's not super exciting, but a lot of that comes down to regulation. So at the speed that AI is moving in the outside world, needs to be regulated in healthcare to make sure that it's been done correctly in a safe and secure way. And I see a lot of trends, like the European Artificial Intelligence Act has provision within that to make sure that we're applying safety checks before it goes to public. We're taking measures to assess and mitigate risks to the fundamental rights for health and safety and ensuring the rule of law. So a lot of government speak, but I see that there's trends around the world where we're looking at this, seeing the potential opportunity, but then putting the guardrails in place to, like you say, democratize it around the world and help safely communicate it. So like the security of data is always a trade-off between keeping that data secure and then being able to share it in a way that generates value for all stakeholders. That's the thing that I already see quite a mature way of thinking in the different, you know, large governmental regulatory bodies around the world.
There's an element of like putting all the right data in the right filing cabinets. We might not be able to do anything with it just yet. Then when the technology catches up, we can then jump straight on it and use that information, use that data to do cool stuff.
Exactly. It doesn't matter what device you take a photograph on. The file that comes from that device is going to be able to be read by your phone, by your computer, by your tablet, by your TV. We're kind of at that stage now with all of the disparate data sets that we've got in healthcare. Some of it's, you know, paper-based, some of it's image-based. That different modality, it's exactly right. That needs to be collected, protected, and communicated in a way that everything can work together.
Wow. Thanks so much, Michael. It's been great to hear you and Rich talk about this. Super important. And to our listeners, you can find more on the topics discussed in today's episode in the show notes.
Right, we are getting towards the end of the show, which means it is time for This Week in History, a look at monumental events in the world of business and technology, which has changed our lives.
So last week's clue was, it's 1826, and on the inside, we're all bursting with energy. And I had to have a laugh because my initial reaction was, well, I only get that when I have my first cup of coffee. But clearly that's not the answer, right? It was the patenting of the internal combustion engine. So Ooh. Prolific American inventor Samuel Morey invented the engine following years of work on steam engines and shipping, including perfecting the paddle wheel that drove many early steamships. His internal combustion engine was arguably more ingenious, but rather commercially unsuccessful in his lifetime. It had a long-lasting legacy, though, and is remarkably similar to the engines we know today in its layout. And the major difference is that Moray's engine drove the pistons using a vacuum from escaping gas rather than the explosion of fuel and air driving the piston as we know today. Pretty cool, though.
Yes, it really is. Well, next week, the clue is... it's 1965. And when it comes to computers, we want more, more, more. I added my own emphasis there. I don't think that's the trickiest one we've done. But if you do know, don't tell us. Just hold on to it until next week and then you'll find out. Right. Well, that brings us to the end of Technology Now for this week. And thank you so much to our guest, Rich Bird, Worldwide Healthcare and Life Sciences Lead at Hewlett-Packard Enterprise.
And to our listeners, thank you so much for joining us.
Technology Now is hosted by Aubrey Lovell and myself, Michael Bird. And this episode was produced by Sam Datapoulin and Al Booth, with production support from Harry Morton, Zoe Anderson, Alicia Kempson, Alison Paisley, Alyssa Mitri, Camilla Patel, and Chloe Suo.
Our social editorial team is Rebecca Wissinger, Judy Ann Goldman, Katie Guarino, and our social media designers are Alejandra Garcia, Carlos Alberto Suarez, and Ambar Maldonado.
Technology Now is a Lower Street production for Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, and we will see you at the same time, the same place next week.